Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Garrison. I'm an alcoholic. And it's truly through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982, and that does not make me a miracle. Alcoholics Anonymous is a miracle in here. If you're new here tonight, I want to welcome you to AA. And I always call it God's magnificent AA, the program that saved my life, and it's going to save yours too if you want to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strongly that you get a sponsor, that you get our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy, do everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 30 years, and people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West LA, a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job and you might change your mind. I certainly have a job of mine, and I'm proud to have that job. I want to thank Mike and the committee for originally asking me to come out, and certainly Tom for following that up in the committee. I had a wonderful time, and I want to thank Kelly and Esther for picking me up from the airport, and those girls are taking such good care of me this weekend, I can't begin to tell you. You know, I was diagnosed 2 years ago with diabetes, and I've just had a terrible time with this weekend. It keeps going up and down and up and down. That's why I have orange juice right there. But anyway, they've been taking such good care of me, and I thank you for the lovely basket in my room and all the food and the beautiful hotel room, and I've had a wonderful time, so thank you so much. And I want to make a special mention of my friend Brian, my new friend Brian right there. Brian drove down from Long Island to be with us, so let's welcome him here. And I love the people I'm with this weekend. Bob Bazance, who I've known for many years, is one of my heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous, and Tom, I just absolutely adore him, Polly and Dave, and Wayne, it's good to see Wayne too, and a number of people that I've known for years are in this room tonight, and so I'm so glad you guys are here, and I'm glad that I'm here too. But, you know, I got a golden retriever 2 years ago, and I love this dog, you guys, and I miss her so much this weekend. She is my Dolly puppy, I'll tell you, and she's brought a great deal of joy in my life, and she's really ornerier than hell. You ought to be around her, but I miss her terribly and stuff. But my roommate sent pictures on, she texted some pictures to Kelly for me, so I got to see what she was doing this weekend. But anyway, I've been talking to an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth, and one thing is to talk to my sponsor, and Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes. And if anybody in this room is wondering about a man for a sponsor, why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I didn't get sober in California. I got sober in Lincoln, Nebraska, and was not doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud of that as I stand here tonight. And thank God for the old-timers, because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. I tell you, my life is nothing but totally, completely turned around as a result of that. And I actually adore the ground that man walks on. I talked to him Tuesday, and I said, I won't be at the Pacific Group tomorrow night because I'll be in Florida. And he said, why are you missing your home group on Wednesday night? And I said, I just told you I'll be in Florida on Wednesday. He said, why are you going to Florida when you're not even speaking until Friday night? And I said, because they invited me to, that's why. But what I wanted to say is you missed the Pacific Group plenty of times, so what are you yelling at me for? But I didn't say that. I know better than that. What I said was, yes, sir, it won't happen again. But anyway, he's really mad at me. But all righty. Anyway, he's really mad at me, but he'll get over it. You know, the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. I had alcoholic hepatitis, I had a liver cirrhosis, I had ruptured esophageal varices, and if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want it, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. And I literally could not believe what's going on in my life. I'd lost my children, I'd lost my husband twice, I'd lost my home, my car, it was over, and I was dying. And I lost the one thing about my knees and disease, I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. Absolutely devastated me, but not stop me from drinking. And there's a reason for that. It's in the biblical Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I have an obsession that will just absolutely kill me. I had to drink. It was not an option to me anymore. I had to do it. I was addicted to alcohol. I could not live without it. And I went through hell to get sober, I got to tell you guys. But anyway, you know, I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. I come from a wonderful home there in Nebraska. I love my mom and dad very much. My dad was an alcoholic. My dad died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know how that happened. And the fact that he was an alcoholic, and they ever found A or not, I don't know. I just know he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. So one more time tonight, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing, but this is serious business. And I would give any girl if my father were alive tonight, because we would have a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school and homecoming queen, shooting all that kind of stuff, and made straight A's and never cracked a book, and I made straight F's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. She was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, and now she's retired and teaches school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys, as a direct result of this program, I love her very much today. And I found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside. You and I never used to know that. I have a brother who was a fighter pilot in the Navy for many years. My brother retired about 10 years ago due to Iraq and Afghanistan. He's been called back in the service. And, you know, my brother did not drink, did not use drugs when he was growing up. He was just straight as an arrow, Mike, let me tell you. And he used to really get on my nerves, if you know the truth. But anyway, I'm so glad that he's okay. And he's home right now. He's home from all that. So he had a safe trip home, and that's all that counts and stuff. And I have another sister who's married to a public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of a whole bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome to their homestead than I ever used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, the truth. They're high successful people, and they bored me to tears, I got to tell you. I have a couple of kids who are 50 and 51 years old, and I know I'm certainly not old enough to have kids at age, but by God, I sure do. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me, let me tell you. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, you know the truth, but those couple of jerks have given me five of the most gorgeous grandbabies you've ever seen before in your life, and those grandbabies have never seen their grandmother drink, and I hope to God they never do. So things in my family are very good tonight. It's only a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can assure you, and it took a long time for it to happen. But anyway, I was a disruptive jerk when I was growing up, always in trouble getting kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I literally hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you know the truth. And I never felt like I belonged anywhere. I heard that a lot from the speakers this weekend. I always felt like I did not belong to anything. And Alcoholics Anonymous is probably the first place I've ever felt like I belonged and stuff. But anyway, I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here. If you pat me on the head, my pants will happen to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name it, I love it. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men. There's a room full of them here tonight. I can just feel it, you know. That's one thing, girls, I love about Southern California. It's got so many sick men, I'm just entertained around the clock 24 hours a day. And, you know, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married. In my day, girls, you had to get married. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. That's just what we did and stuff. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic. He was 17. I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of. And I quickly found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis, come home and beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. My dad would lay one hand on my mom. She'd have knocked him from here to the moon, I gotta tell you. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much. And I'm not blaming her for my alcoholism, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story. I need to share it. And some in that family had to get a job. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Nebraska. And the magic was put in my life. I literally fell in love with nursing. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school. I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I'd love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm here to tell you now from this point that is a bunch of garbage. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. Anyway, I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years. And I worked full-time for 3 years. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here, I can tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they tell me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession, and I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people I take care of or the people I work with in ordinary circumstances. And what I have to tell you now is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 6 times during that divorce. I never married these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism. But anyway, I graduated from nurse's training. I went to work at surgery in a hospital there in Lincoln. And I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. I drank, ran with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard and they played hard. And I need to tell you guys that the incidence of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high. And that'll do a lot for you. You're going to have surgery next week. That has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're telling generally what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick of what our drinking was like. I love to tell this story because it just shows you what my drinking was like. I went to a little concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And I was part of the medical staff, and they hired like 9 nurses from Nebraska to come out and take care of all the people that would probably get hurt that weekend, and God knows they did. But anyway, we flew to New York, met 80 doctors there, and we all drove up to Woodstock, and they paid us all $1,000 apiece, and that was a lot of money in those days, folks. And that was in 1969, August 1969. But anyway, I loved being at Woodstock. My God, I'll never forget any of it and stuff. You know, a lot of people say they were at Woodstock, and I'll tell you, a lot of them aren't telling the truth. I always talk to them, I say, who were the artists? Because I know every artist because I was there for every artist. But Richie Havens and Joe Cocker and Country Joe and Santana, all those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. And things have not changed in my life in a little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin, if I remember that call, Thomas, you guys, I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd have traded Janis for Clancy any day, if you know the truth. But please don't tell him I said that. And that's a lie. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for 20 Janis Joplins. But drinking for me at one time was a fun, fun thing, you guys. It'd be a lie to stand tonight and say anything but that. But I can't remember the fun. I can remember the pain that it caused me. And it almost cost me life and stuff. And anyway, you know, the drunk driving charges, the bad checks, all the stuff we eventually do. My kids are in trouble. And I thought, you know what? I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Because I need to eat with him for all the things he's done to me. You know, if anybody's thinking about getting married to the same person twice in here tonight, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. Sorry, but that's the way I feel. And he feels the same way I do, as a matter of fact. And I danced that man through 3 of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you guys this story, but I tell you, my sponsor always tells me, that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA points. I said, okay, fine, I won't tell him. He said, no, go ahead and tell the people see how sick you really were. And apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, so I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I will kill you next time you hit me. He said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. He lied is what he did. He came home drunk one night, and I happened to be sober this night for some reason, and I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk? They want to take you to bed and stuff, and I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober, and, you know. I will say that with shoes on the other foot, though, it's fine with me, and, you know. That guy came and indicated that to me, and I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about, you know, the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch, and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he sat up for hours, you guys, his eyes pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I got to tell you. And I was sitting there watching this guy, and I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you this drunk to tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. You guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse, but anyway, I thought to myself, what can I do to get even this guy for all the things he's done to me? And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing we should never do, folks, is think, drink and think at the same time. This is many, many years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue was powerful stuff. You'd not want to screw around with super glue. I got that glue on, I read the directions on that glue, and like I said, I was drunk and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you get it off within 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said is, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 5 minutes, is what it said. And I was this guy, I get so excited when I tell this story, I could just do it all over again, but I went over to this guy, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one person that had super glue, and I laughed about it, and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe it. You know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true, but I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. Yeah. And we had a telephone by our bedroom, there in Lincoln. He called the police and the cops were in front of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind, they do not see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which maybe the whole thing was funny. They said, "Lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this?" I said, "What makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for God's sake." And they said, "You're under arrest for assault and battery." And I said, "You cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that." And 2 days later, when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did, and they took me to jail, I might add. It turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get 2 surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And you know, there's a paper about that at Creighton. I mean, there's something on medical school you can read about it if you want to. I'd always wind up paper and rather than not like this, I got to tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting out of this marriage. When this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut. And he would have, too, I got to tell you. I'm sorry, but he would have. But anyway, we had to both go to court the very next week. And that judge said, "Why don't you two grow up? Get out of my courtroom, both of you. Fine, $200 apiece, get out of my courtroom." I was more than happy to pay $200 for doing that. But so anyway, what a horrible. I got to make amends for that, too, folks, in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor told me, he said, "You fly to Sacramento, California, and make amends to your ex-husband. That's where he currently lives." And I said, "Okay." And, you know, I'm still in love with him, if you guys want to know the truth. He was my first love, and there's nothing like your first love, ladies. And I mean, we were married twice, and, you know, we had 2 beautiful kids together, and there's a lot of good things that happen in our marriages, but a lot of bad things happen, too. But anyway, so I flew up there, and I called him ahead of time, and I said, "I'm going to come, but I need to talk to you. Is that okay?" And he said, "Okay." And Clancy told me, he said, "Clancy knows how I feel about him." He said, "Do not meet him by yourself. Meet him with people, but not with people, like a restaurant or something." I said, "Okay." So I met him in the restaurant. And he walked in that door, and girls, I almost fell over. I thought, I don't believe I am feeling this. I thought I hated him. And it turned out to be just exactly the opposite of it. I'm glad my sponsor told me, don't sit there by yourself with him. And so because he told me, he said, "Why don't you spend the night tonight?" I said, "Nope, that's not why I came up here. I came up here to talk with you about things that I did to make you unhappy, and I wish that we could just keep it at that." And he said, "Oh, Karen, come on, you know how you feel about me. I still feel the same way about you. Come on, let's be honest about it." And I said, "I'm not spending the night. If you guys think I'm going to fly back to LA and explain to my sponsor how come I just slept with my ex-husband who's currently married to somebody else, you're sadly mistaken." So, but anyway, I made my amends, and one more time, the promises came through in life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I felt good about that. And you know, we're not going to ever be dear friends, you guys, I can assure you, but we do are in a working, talking situation. We have a lot in common. We have grandkids, we have children and stuff, so we have to be able to talk once in a while. But anyway, his sister died about 3 weeks ago, and he called me at home and told me about it. I was really glad that he did that. And I sent flowers to his family there in Nebraska, and I did all the right things and stuff. And I was so glad that I made amends to all those people years ago, too, because that let me put my foot in the door on that one. But you know, I mean, things are so good with my family and my ex-husband's family and stuff. I can't believe it. But anyway, you know, like I said, my drinking progressed, and I just kept worse and worse and worse. And, you know, I'll never forget what it felt like to wake up in Palmyra, Nebraska, which is a town of about probably 20 people, right outside of Lincoln. And I was stark naked walking down the highway, carrying my purse and walking in my high heels. And of all the luck, I ran to the state police. And they said, "What are you doing?" And I thought, "Oh, no." They said, "Where are your clothes at?" And I said, "Beats me." And it did beat me. I didn't know where they were. And they said, "Get in the car." And I said, "I'm not getting in the car naked with 2 men." So they had to get a policewoman out there. And that really made them mad, you guys. But so anyway, I got thrown in the cop car one more time and taken to jail for that, indecent exposure. And you know, my family got to see all that in the paper the next day. But you know, I was in Kansas City. I loved it, drinking Kansas City and Chicago and Omaha, Des Moines, Iowa. I drank in a lot of different places, Colorado, Denver, you know. It's only about 500 miles away from Lincoln, all those places. So believe me, I'm very familiar with the bars in those places. But anyway, you know, I was at the Hyatt Regency with a girlfriend of mine from Nebraska, and we've been drinking all evening, and we've been to a football game, and we're back in our hotel. And for some reason, I just got out of bed in the middle of the night and walked straight into the glass elevator at the Hyatt Regency, stark naked. And I took the elevator downstairs to the first floor, and it opened up, and I thought, "Oh my God, I don't have any clothes on. Where are my clothes?" And but anyway, there was a maid that worked at the hotel, and thank God for her. She was so good. She threw a bathrobe around me, and she took care of me and stuff until I could go back into my room and call my family to come and get me. And they were not happy about that either, I got to tell you guys. But You know, what was I thinking of? Getting onto a glass elevator stark naked and stuff. You know, that goes all the way to the top, and you can see it all over Kansas City. So sometimes people say to me, "You look so familiar," and I thought, well, I wonder why. Okay. People were really getting sick of my behavior, and I'll tell you, I was getting sick of my behavior too, you guys. But anyway, you know, the day came for me that hospital told me, they said, "Karen, we cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. Glue in husbands, drunk driving charges, bad checks, all the crap that you're doing." They said, "You have a drinking problem. You need to go to a treatment center. Now, you need to do this. We're not going to argue about it. We're just telling you. You call in sick all the time. We cannot have this kind of stuff." And they said, "You're going to treatment or you're out of here." And I made the biggest mistake I've ever made before in my life. I said, "You and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center?" And I walked out of a job that I love more than anything in the whole world. I had that job for 19 years, guys. That was my identity, really. I mean, I just loved it. And I loved working in the operating room, period. And anyway, I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. By this time, I was addicted to alcohol. I had to have it. And I'm talking about powerful physical addiction, not just an obsession. It was powerful physical. And I'd wake up in the middle of the night shaking violently in the morning. So I discovered the morning drink, and that was a bad thing to discover for me. But, you know, I'd take two or three shots of vodka before I could even get to work and stuff. And obviously, I couldn't drink at work, so I started stealing drugs is what I did. And I'm certainly not proud of that as I stand here now, I've got to tell you guys. But I was stealing morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium. I would take anything I could take to stop those shakes and stuff. And the day came for me, the people that ran that place, they said, "Karen, what is the world as a matter with you? You are just weird is what you are. You know, you take really good care of the patients, but you're just strange." And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange too if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange too. And I threw my keys at them and I walked out before they fired me. And then the day came for me when I got caught red-handed stealing some morphine from that hospital. And this is going to be without a doubt the most humiliating day of my entire life. And they said, "You give us your narcotic keys, and you get out of this hospital. Don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska." That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My job should have done, too, as a matter of fact. And long story short, here tonight, I lost my nursing license, as I should have lost it. And I went up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. You know, I don't keep on this room. I've done street time. But I got to tell you guys, it is not pretty out there, especially for a woman to be on the streets by herself. I became willing to do anything I had to do to get that alcohol and drugs, and I did a lot of bad stuff out there. But you know, drinking on the streets is not fun. And I was in Chicago and Denver and Kansas City. None of those places are easy to find alcohol. And so you got to make friends on the streets. And I know how to make friends. I can make friends real quick. And we would take care of each other and stuff. And, you know, we'd lay on the street and sleep at night. And people would steal your purse. They'd take money out of your pockets or whatever. It's a horrible place to be, you guys. Every night we're trying to find shelters to stay in and food to eat. And it was just absolutely a hideous way of life. And I spent 2 years of my life doing that, telling myself every day, "This is my last drink. I'm stopping right this minute." And I didn't. I couldn't stop. So anyway, the day came for me when I was so physically sick. And you know the four hideous horsemen we saw the other night in the play? And that play was just fabulous, you guys, by the way. Thank you so much. I believe those fears are, you know, the frustration, the bewilderment, and the terror, and despair. And I felt all those things big time. But anyway, I was so physically sick, I went up on the streets is what happened to me. And I found myself back in Lincoln, Nebraska in 1982, and it was February in Nebraska, and it was really cold in February in Nebraska. And I passed down the streets down 9th and O Street there in Lincoln. That's a Skid Row area down there. And there I was, and thank God that I got picked up by a place that believes we take care of anybody, whether you got insurance or not, because I was taken right to the very hospital I used to work at, and I was mortified, and so were they when they saw me. But, you know, that doctor in the emergency room told me, he said, "You know what, little girl? You have esophageal varices. You know, we're going to give you blood. We're giving you 3 pints of blood right now." I was just puking up blood. And they said, "You drink again, you're going to die. We're not playing with you. You drink again, you're going to die." And they scared the hell out of me, let me tell you. But so anyway, I made a decision, okay, I'm not going to drink anymore. So I went to an intensive care ward, and there I was laying there with tubes coming out of my belly. They had drains slid off my liver. I had IVs going. And I found myself in withdrawal that was so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I lived in that intensive care ward, and I shook and I shook and I died for one solid month. And I screamed at those nurses, demand they give me drugs for this withdrawal. They would not give me drug one. They said, "There's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any of your brigadiers. You're not getting one drug, so quit asking us for them." But they tried what these people did for me. They got 10 members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come and sit with me. And these people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. And, you know, I get so angry when I hear people say, "We don't go unless the alcoholic calls us." Ladies and gentlemen, I'm standing here 30 years sober tonight. I never made any damn phone call. Those nurses made that phone call, and those the members of AA came. And, you know, like our thing says, always to be there. you know, when the Hander Bay reaches out, we always want the Hander Bay to be there. And thank God for that. That they would read, those members of Alcoholics Anonymous, they would read the book to me. And they say, Karen, all you got to do is breathe. Just keep breathing. Breathing, that's all you got to do right now. And at 30 days of sobriety, I went to the official treatment program at the hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion one way or the other. But apparently I went to a final because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And anyway, I was not doing well in that treatment center. I went through like 13 counselors in that place. I got kicked out of groups all the time because I wouldn't cooperate. And they said, turn around, we don't even want to look at you. And I thought, it would be my pleasure to turn around and not look at you either. But anyway, I completed that inpatient program. I went to an outpatient program. I went to an evening care program. And I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing one thing that we teach people in AA to do it. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town. You know, you can pull all your crap around here you want to pull. And one of these days, one of these old-timers is going to grab you, let me tell you. And that's exactly what happened to me. And this little guy, he was sober 42 years, and I liked him very much, but he scared me because he always looked funny at me and stuff. And he says, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the people in AA, the new people, that we don't need to read the book and we don't need a sponsor? He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy, and this man speaks, and you're going to go up there and ask him to be your sponsor. Ask him if he'll be your sponsor. He's a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. I tell this old-timer, I said, who do you think you're going to tell me you're going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go this Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska, and I paid that money back, too, by the way. And I will tell you guys from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that man literally put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. My life has never been the same since that talk. You know, my sponsor has the uncanny ability that I don't know of anybody that can do it better of explaining alcoholism. And I sat there and listened to that. I intently listened to him. And for the first time, I knew it was wrong, and I knew what I needed to do about it and stuff. So I went by asking him to be my sponsor. And he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazy than I ever thought of being. And I thought to myself, why did he say that to me for? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact this old-timer had called him, too. He was proud of him coming to Nebraska and asked him, they brought him if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game. He said, Karen, I like to sponsor people on long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you because I don't do it for you. You'll probably go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl. You better listen to me real good because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day. I tell you not to call me every day. You're going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people. Become an active bottom of the block like Thomas. You're not going to argue with me. Defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day my recovery really began in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said two words and I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. I don't tell people yes, sir. Trust me, I don't. But anyway, I went back to Lincoln, and it wasn't long before Clancy was telling me, I want you to get that nursing license back. I said, Clancy, they're not going to talk to me. They want nothing to do with me. He said, shut up and let me finish. Get the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, he said, I believe it's at the Capitol there in Lincoln, and get up there and say you want your nursing license back, that you will do anything that they want you to do to get that license back. I said, they're not going to do it. And he said, all right. He said, I guess I have to resort to this. Don't call me until you do it, damn it. And the phone went dead. I thought, well, now I got to do it. So I went up there, and much to my sheer amazement, you know, I asked them, please, I would like my license back. What do I have to do? And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, you know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process, too. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred 2 years later when one more time I was stripped in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And that is a gift from AA. Thank you. I do not deserve that. By God, I intend to take it. You know, I have the dubious honor of being the first person in Nebraska that ever got their license back. And I've also had the state board there has referred me many, many girls that I worked with over the years. And I got a letter from the state board about 5 years ago, and they said, 2,500 people have followed your footsteps. Thank you for blazing the trail in Nebraska. And what a thrill that is. My God, you know. So anyway, I got my license back. I went back to work, and I was so happy to be back there. And they were glad to have me back, too. I worked real hard, you guys. I worked my butt off wherever I work. And you know, I went to visit California a couple times. I fell in love with Southern California AA. I found myself telling my sponsor on the phone, I want to move to L.A., but on the Pacific Group, I want to do that. And you know, my kids are going, there's not one reason why I can't do that. And he said, no, he said, not now. He said, you think about it for a good year before you do it. That is a big decision for you to make. So I found myself about 6 weeks later calling him on the phone. I said, I quit my job, my car's packed, I'm on my way. And he said, get your job back, unpack the car. I told you to wait a year now, didn't I? So I had to wait the whole year, but I did that. And I found myself out there in May of 1986, and I've not been sorry a day since I've been there and stuff. But anyway, I wanted to work at UCLA in the offering, be on two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I wanted to belong to the Pacific Group. I wanted this and I wanted that. And every single of those things have come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. I don't deserve any of my God intended to take it. So anyway, you know, I went to, you know, I asked Clancy one day. I said, you know, what is God's will? He said, how the hell am I supposed to know? I'm not God. He said, I have to believe that what you're doing in front of you is God's will. Do what's in front of you. And I had no idea what he's even talking about, you guys. And he said, clean the toilet when it's dirty. Go to work, work hard. Work, you know, give them a good 40 hours for a good 40-hour paycheck. That kind of stuff. Just answer the phone when it rings. Just do what's in front of you to do. He said, what are you, stupid or what? And I said, yeah, I guess I am. So I started doing those things. And you know, I he said, oh, by the way, he said, are you praying? I said, nope, I don't believe in God. He said, get on your knees in the morning, get on your knees at night, and you pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. He said, I mean it, Karen. He said, we get a day to reprieve from this. There's going to come a day when I can't help you, A can't help you, and you'll be deafened if you don't do this. Get on your knees and start praying. And so I started doing that. I didn't feel any connection with God. I did it for 4 years, and I didn't feel any connection with God. I felt like a dumbbell doing something on the truth. But in 1985, I found myself in Montreal, Canada, at the World Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you guys haven't experienced a World Conference, I will see you in Atlanta, Georgia, in a couple more years, I guess. And anyway, it's really something that none of us should ever miss and stuff. And anyway, I had driven straight through from Nebraska with five people I sponsored and myself, six alcoholic women, quack, 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 on the whole way to Montreal. I would never do it again in a million years, trust me. But we only had $100 apiece. We had no place to stay. We had no room, nothing. Went to the convention center in Montreal and found an apartment for the whole week for $100. I could not believe our good luck. And I found myself in a great big football stadium that Friday night meeting. And there were 65,000 sober alcoholics in that football stadium. And I was in awe of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in absolute awe of this program. And they were down the football field. They were practicing for a flag ceremony. My sponsor was helping them direct that flag ceremony. Alcoholics from all the world carrying their national flags. And I know if you're new here, it all sounds real hokey. But the longer I stay sober, the cornier I get for some reason. So I ran to tell my sponsor hi. And you know, just people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys, I'm from Nebraska, and I was impressed, let me tell you. And I'm impressed to interview from all the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember that, ran back up and joined my friends in that flag ceremony started. And I will never forget this as long as I live. I will never forget this. When the United States of America's flag touched the turf of that stadium, I saw 65,000 people go absolutely crazy in that football stadium. I looked around myself. There was not one dry eye in that football stadium. I saw those old-timers sitting around, all the new people, all the people in between. They all seemed to be loving this thing so very, very much. And I remember thinking to myself, what is wrong with me? Why can't I feel the way these people are feeling? I, too, wanted to live Alcoholics Anonymous. I could not seem to achieve it somehow. And for the first time in my life, I got tears in my eyes and I tried to stop. And for the first time, with any amount of sincerity whatsoever, any amount of sincerity, I said, oh, God, thank you for getting me here. Please help me to stay here. Please help me love this problem as much as these people do. And I will tell you guys, in a foreign country, in a foreign land, I came to believe in a power greater than myself by watching being with people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I cried and I cried and I cried. And I felt so good and stuff. And I've taught that guy every day sincerely since because I believe my sponsors taught me. I get a daily reprieve and that's all that I get and stuff. So anyway, I was doing the stuff Clancy asked me to do. My life was changing rapidly and stuff. And the more busy I got in AA, the more people I sponsored. I had 56 people I sponsored in Lincoln, Nebraska, and that's a lot, let me tell you guys. But anyway, you know, I was dealing with Clancy asked me, and I felt good about it and stuff. You know, I asked him one time, I said, you know, how important is it to answer the phone in the middle of the night? He said, always answer the phone in the middle of the night. That's very important you do that. And so, you know, I worked at UCLA in the operating room for many, many years, and I was on two of the transplant teams, and you know, sometimes we had to work. I worked 72 hours this one particular week I want to talk to you about. And I love to tell this story, you guys. It's so precious to me. And the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning. I thought, I'm not answering that damn phone. It's either somebody I sponsor wanting to whine about something, or it's my boss wanting me to come to work. And I'm not answering the phone. And my head told me, pick up that damn phone. Somebody's in trouble. Nobody calls at 2 o'clock in the morning that's not in trouble. And so I answered the phone, thank God. And sure enough, it was my boss. She said, I've got 18 people sick over tonight. I've got a liver transplant doing a little girl that's about 3 years old. I have nobody to do it. Now get over here and help me. I don't want to hear it, Ken. I know you work 72 hours. I don't care. Get over here right now and help me. And the phone went dead. So I went to work, and I'm so glad you guys, the most precious thing happened to me. I sent my orderly upstairs to bring our little patient down to surgery, and he called me in the back, and he said, "You're not going to believe all the people in this family." He said, "It was like 80 people in this family." I thought, how highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning, how highly unusual any time, you know, the truth. And so anyway, I went out front to get my patient, and the first thing I noticed was the mom. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life, and the dad was good-looking and stuff, and sure enough, there was like 80 people in that family. And I looked down at my little patient, and I got to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to fall in love. I mean, to feel love like I never felt before in my life. And I ever so gently fell in love with this little baby girl. And she was so sick, and she didn't lift her head off the pillow. She was so sick. And she was dying from some strange liver thing and needed a transplant. And in her arms, she had a little bear in her arms. And I said, "Oh, you brought your little baby bear down to surgery." And she tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, "Oh, you're both going to have one." She said, "Oh, no, just the bear." Anyway, we sent the family out of the way, and that mom was an absolute hysteric, so I got to tell you guys. And this baby looked at me and she said, "Why is my mommy crying? Tell my mommy not to cry. I can't stand my mommy cries." And I said, "Your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so much, and she's just worried about you. We're going to make you all better, then your mommy won't cry anymore." And she said, "Okay." And so anyway, we have an anesthesiologist at UCLA that loves to play with the kids, you guys. He's just a delight to work with. So when she got her IV started, the bear got an IV started. His bag said bear juice, and he thought that was real funny and stuff. And when she went to sleep, the bear went to sleep. And it was really quite painless, for me, you know, the truth. But I got to tell you guys, that 6-hour transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss. I have never seen a team of people pull together like we did for that baby that night. And 6 hours later, she went up to her room, but not much hope at all. She'd lost a tremendous amount of blood. And well, we said some prayers on that one, I'll tell you. I became obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again. We have a rule there. You may not get yourself involved with these transplant patients. Then when the organs come from, we cannot tell them. It's best not to see them after surgery. Now, I'll tell you, I've been in this room tonight, that I'm real good at breaking rules now, and I thought, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing. I'm not going to talk to anybody. So when she was 6 days post-op from that transplant, up that baby's room at the door of that child's room, and I could not believe it was in front of my face. My God, the power of God, the power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she went to surgery. She was jumping up and down her crib. She had her diapers hanging around her knees. She had that bear in one arm. She put band-aids, all this bear. He had band-aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And that whole room full of people were in there. And something caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. And for some reason, I wasn't a bit surprised and stuff. And I asked the mother, I said, "Whose book is that?" And she said, "Well, that's my book. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So is my husband. Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. And those people had driven 500 miles to be with this family. They were not from the L.A. area. And they showed me one more time what this thing is all about. It's about love and service, and that's all it's about." And I was impressed, let me tell you guys. But anyway, I asked the mom, I said, "How long have you been sober?" And she said, 5 years today." I thought, oh my God, her baby up for the first time. What a fabulous birthday present and stuff. And I watched with this little girl, and she handed me her bear. She said, "You take him home and take care of him. He's too sick and he's a nurse." And I know why she gave it to me, to get me the hell away from her. I just my scrub clothes on and stuff. And she said, "Go away, I'm not sick anymore." And I told the mom, I said, "I can't take that baby's bear home. I got this bear, went through this baby's liver transplant. We had her little head the whole time of her surgery in a little plastic bag. She said, Karen, please take it. She wants you to have it. She's got 50 bears in this room." And she did indeed have 50 bears in that room. I felt like a fool who got to hold that bear. But that bear became my most prized possession from Alcoholics Anonymous. They got to be too important to me. You know, when it's too important, folks, we got to get rid of it. Let me tell you, my little granddaughter said to me, "Grandma, can I have that bear?" She knows the whole story. I said, "Brandy, that's Grandma's bear." And she said, "But I want that bear." I said, "I'll buy you 700 bears. It's my bear." And she says, "No, I want him." My little girlfriends are coming around. I want to tell them that story. And it was so bad for me, I talked to my sponsor. My sponsor told me, "Give her that goddamn bear right this minute. You're the most selfish person I've ever seen before in my life." I thought, that's the last straw. I'm changing sponsors. But I never did. So anyway, I just visited my bear last summer. He sits on her dresser in Lincoln, Nebraska. She's 23 years old now, and the band-aids are all intact. I said, "Brandy, give me back the bear." And she said, "No, Grandma, you get..." Clancy said, "I could have the bear, Grandma." I said, "All right, you can have it." But anyway, you know, in that hospital room, you know, the mom told me she was 5 years sober. And I had a medallion for 5 years of sobriety in my pocket because Clancy had given me that when I was 5 years sober. And I'd never given it to anybody. I'm a selfish person, I'm sorry to say. I could not seem to find the woman that was special, in my opinion, to give my medallion to. And I knew I'd found her. And I gave her that. And she says, "Oh, I can't take that. My God, Clancy." Yeah. I said, "No, I want you to have it." And I really, really meant that. And the nurses got wind of this. We got a cake for the mother. We celebrated our 5 days of sobriety. 5 years of sobriety, and I got to tell you guys, it was one of the most magnificent days of my entire life, and I could have missed the whole damn thing. How many times in my life have I missed stuff because I wouldn't take a simple action like picking up the phone when it rang? You know, that makes me crazy if I think about it long enough, but, you know, my life is so good, and I thank you guys so much. And you know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing this, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them than what our 12th tradition says, long for them, so that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, I may forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walk me when nobody else will walk with me. You held my hand, nobody else will hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperately as I need you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't do any of those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, and that is this, that I love this program more than anything in the whole world. It's truly a story from an alcoholic hell I cannot even describe. I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing. I'm going to shut my mouth here running time. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row, Nebraska, to where I stand in southern Florida tonight. And I think, but for the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life.